Welcome to Amped Up. This is your host, Ryan Knight, and our guest today is Erica Gordon, although you may know her as the white trash socialist on Twitter. Erica is an activist, an organizer, an anti-war veteran, and a member of Left Flank Vets. Erica, welcome to Amped Up.
Thank you so much for having me, Ryan.
You know, I love your story because, you know, you are a veteran and happy Veterans Day, by the way, or happy Veterans Week. But, you know, you're a veteran who is now outspoken against the military industrial complex and is now fighting to end these endless wars. Can you share with us a little bit about your journey from serving in the military to being an activist who opposes the U.S. for-profit war machine? And also talk a little bit about your work with Left Flank Vets.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I never really had that sense of duty or anything to join the military that some people might have. I was poor my entire life. I'm usually very outspoken about growing up in poverty. And there's something called the poverty draft, which essentially means that your material conditions are bad enough that when you have something like the United States military that offers you guaranteed housing, guaranteed healthcare, you know, guaranteed meals. When you're looking at someone who's unhoused, who's skipping meals, who hasn't ever been to a dentist at 18, it's like a golden platter. And so when I join the military and I go and I talk to a recruiter because I'm desperate, I specifically picked a job that I thought would do the least harm, which was a sonar technician, and signed a 6-year contract and off I went. And that was in 2014. And during that time period, I deployed once. I did lots of underways, which is just time at sea doing different missions, but I deployed to the Middle East one time. And it took that one deployment to completely open my eyes that, like, this isn't right. None of this is right. There's no reason for us to be here. And I served under both the Obama administration as well as the Trump administration. And war is a bipartisan effort. It didn't get any worse under Trump, and it didn't get any better under Obama. It actually expanded under Obama from the Bush years. So it's pretty easy to kind of have your eyes opened to this machine that is the military-industrial complex that puts us in a position now to where I'm out. I am a disabled veteran. I have, you know, years of trauma, and you know, I can go on and on about the inner workings on that, but it's so eye-opening to get out and see it from the outside and connect with other veterans like the other vets that I work with Left Flank Veterans, and just kind of see everything that this monster has become. And now, I mean, that's one of my main missions in life, is to just consistently attack the military-industrial complex and hold everyone accountable, whether that be a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah, you know, one of my epiphanies with the military-industrial complex is that, you know, these wars were basically sending poor and working-class people, such as yourself. You know, thank you for sharing openly and honestly about, you know, growing up poor and seeing the, you know, the military as a way out, because our government just doesn't take care of its people, right? Because we live in this predatory capitalistic system where basic human needs, you know, are not provided by our government. So, you know, but what opened my eyes is, like, that we're sending working class people over to fight these wars to make the rich richer, you know, and to make the defense industry richer. Is basically what it comes down to, right?
I mean, that is literally what it is. War is literally like a product of capitalism, and right, everything that we're dealing with now, with things like endless wars, it's insane to me that it has been over 20 years that we've been, I mean, we've been at war as long as I've been alive. There's been some form of foreign intervention happening somewhere, and I don't see an end to it anytime soon. And that's why it's so important for especially veterans that come out of the service to be so outspoken about the military-industrial complex, about how absolutely corrupt the entire system is from the inside out. And the reason why a lot of us, especially at Left Flank or other leftist veterans, don't celebrate Veterans Day is because we believe there just shouldn't be veterans, if that makes sense. And the only way you can do that is to have things like Medicare for all and housing as a human right and guaranteed food, because without the fact that we're missing those things, without, you know, our material conditions being so awful in the United States, people would stop enlisting. That's a huge reason why we don't have things like education for all and Medicare for all. Enlistment rates would drop overnight.
Right. And I mean, part of it too is the propaganda, is the kind of capitalist propaganda, because they tell us, you know, that, you know, we're fighting these wars so our nation can freedom. Be free, right? Mm-hmm. That this is somehow patriotism, somehow that blowing up the world and droning countries equates to freedom. Like, how, I just don't understand how, you know, if your freedom is contingent upon the blood of others, that doesn't sound anything like freedom to me. Like, how do they bait and switch the public so easily like that?
The biggest thing that I've seen as far as propaganda goes about the military is they'll say, we need to keep the wars over there so it doesn't come over here. That's how they try and sell it to people when you talk about, why is there hundreds of military bases across the world? That doesn't make any sense. No other country does that. It's just us. And it's like, oh, well, we got to keep the wars away from our home, or else, you know, we're going to be, America will end up a war zone, or the idea of like spreading democracy for our freedom. But even in the United States, we don't live in a democracy. It's an oligarchy.
That's right.
So it's like, what are we, you know, spreading exactly?
Well, it's almost like we're spreading our oligarchy around the world.
That's exactly what it is.
We're exporting oligarchy. And a lot of, you know, I had, former Senator Mike Gravel on my podcast a few months ago. And it was so eye-opening to hear him talk about the fact that, like, because I asked him, like, who's our greatest threat? And he said, no one.
Yeah.
We are, you know? Yeah. He said, our military budget, you know, we spend more than the next 10 nations combined. Mm-hmm. You know, China doesn't even have one battleship. I think they now are building their first aircraft carrier. You know, Russia is not a threat to us. But because war is so unpopular, they have to manufacture these narratives to make it seem like Russia's a threat, to make it seem like China's a military threat, so that they can keep producing these tanks, right? And they can keep making the defense industry more money. And that was just so eye-opening to hear someone like him, who's been on the inside, and really knows that, like, no, like, you know. And then he talked about this economic sanctions that are just as crippling, where we're putting these economic sanctions on you know, third world countries and poorer countries, and it doesn't hurt the ruling class in those countries.
Never.
These economic sanctions hurt the poor and the working class in these countries. So essentially, we are exporting this capitalistic oligarchic system that we have here, and we're using it to dominate the globe.
Well, and it's interesting as well that you bring up the sanctions, because there are sanctions that happen that people don't even realize, because there's economic sanctions, of course, there's embargoes. And then you have literal blockades that happen, which happened under the Obama administration on my deployment. And this is something that I'm extremely vocal about. And it's difficult because, you know, I get hit from both sides whenever I do openly talk about my deployment, even though I was a sonar technician, which my job consisted of anti-submarine warfare, which really meant I did lots of tech work and was at the bottom of the ship monitoring sonar and, you know, things like that. Nothing combative, nothing like in combat's way. But whenever I openly talk about the positioning of our strike group on deployment and the fact that we were literally blocking aid to Yemen in 2015, 2016, at the same time that Saudi Arabia was waging a genocide in Yemen, and they still are, this is still happening. And I'm very open about like those types of things because people don't know. I'll talk to people now about it that are still huge fans of, you know, the Obama administration, like those years, and they just can't believe it. And I'm like, no, I promise I was there. Like, you can look it up. This is all open information. It's just, why would it be reported on when the same people that profit off the military-industrial complex, that profit off of oil, that profit off these endless wars, are buddies with the same people that own all of the mainstream media outlets? Why would it be reported on? And that was kind of eye-opening to me as well, that most people just don't know that these awful things are happening. And that's why we all need to be talking about it as often as possible.
Well, and I feel like the, you know, the oligarchs love it when Democrats are in power, mm-hmm. because they can keep, you know, they can keep, you know, profiting off of these endless wars. They can keep profiting off of exploiting the working class. Mm-hmm. You know, they can keep profiting off of the destruction of our planet. And liberals just kind of look the other way because they think, oh, the good guys are in power now.
At least it's not the Republicans.
Right. At least it's not the Republicans doing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Democrats have mastered the art of sedating the public with these mm-hmm. platitudes, right? Mm-hmm. Platitudes of hope and change. Meanwhile, they're governing just like Republicans do, you know, for the military industrial complex, for Wall Street, for the giant corporations, and for the ruling class, you know? So we've seen now in the last 40 years, if you just look back, you know, under both Democrat and Republican administrations, income inequality has grown, you know? Mm-hmm. Ever since Reagan's, you know, failed trickle-down economics, it doesn't matter who's in charge because the president, you know, regardless of party, is just continuing the corrupt system, you know? So everyone got so hung up with Trump because he was just more, you know, obnoxious and louder and more brazen about his corruption. But, you know, you get rid of the corrupt president, we still are left with this corrupt system. And that Joe Biden is going to continue, and that the Democrats and Republicans are both a part of. You know, they both take money from these powerful institutions, you know, from Wall Street, from the military industrial complex, from the defense industry, from Big Pharma. And then they write laws and rig the system, you know, for these powerful special interests and against working people.
It's funny with Trump, with foreign policy, because, and I want to make sure I make this very clear, I am by no means pro Donald Trump. He is an absolute, he's a war hawk just like the rest. But some interesting things about Trump, the way he governed in regards to foreign policy was pretty absent. It was usually left up to the Pentagon. It was usually left up to the people that he appointed. But as far as Trump, he really only cared about a select few things for his ego. He's not anti-war by absolutely any stretch of the imagination. That is not what I'm saying. And I do see that thrown around sometimes, but he's not, and this is the scary part, is he's not nearly as pro-war as someone like Biden is. And that is what is concerning. And this is something that we talk about a lot. And it's such a weird reality to face because Trump is very open about the way he feels and the things that he says. And, you know, we all know how he feels about veterans and what he says about them. And it's, I mean, it is very obnoxious, I guess, in a way to deal with. But at the same time, you know, there was not even that long ago, it was a few months ago, he called out military generals for only wanting to continue war for profits. And I was like, oh, well, oops. The worst person made a good point, and that's horrible because now we are seeing a possible expedited procedure of pulling troops out of Afghanistan, and I'm already seeing liberals come out and say that this is a bad thing to happen, and it makes me want to pull my hair out.
Same. And you just kicked off our next segment. You know, I was going to ask you what your predictions are for Joe Biden's foreign policy, because do you see his administration pushing for peace and bringing our troops home? Or do you see him continuing these endless wars? Because after House Democrats voted this year to reject just a 10% reduction in our military budget, and a group of House Democrats worked with Republican Liz Cheney to mm-hmm. stop Trump from bringing our troops home, it seems to me like the Democratic Party has become the pro-war party.
There's a strange realignment happening right now. And I don't know how to really pin it down, but it's the problem is Joe Biden is going to govern like he did while he was in the Senate, when he was pushing for the Iraq war, which he now admits that he knew there was no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He admits that now. That is something that should send someone to The Hague. That is not something that someone should say while running for president and then winning. Right. It's like admitting that when we've had millions, not hundreds of thousands, millions of lives lost overseas and, you know, tens of thousands of Americans dying. for something that he knew wasn't real as he was a Senate Majority Leader. He was in the same position that Mitch McConnell is now, for people to really put that into perspective. He had the power to do these things. So I don't have a lot of hope for a Biden administration to do anything but expand the wars. I worry a lot about countries that are starting to have more of a socialist community, like Venezuela, like Bolivia, like Cuba, because look how openly aggressive he was about we beat the socialist. What do you think is going to happen in terms of foreign policy to these countries that are making incredible strides for the working class? If they start showing that, hey, like in Bolivia especially, if you can do these things, if you can reject a coup that was manufactured here, and they start rising and they start like really just growing as a country and as people, I am terrified for a Biden administration because, one, they're more competent than Donald Trump's administration. And two, Biden's already like sent the green light out to have people come in. I mean, 1/3 of the people that are working on Biden's transition team for things like foreign policy literally were involved in the Iraq war and are funded by those same people. That's not a good thing.
Right. No, there was an article out. Yeah. 1/3 of his foreign policy transition team also were affiliated with pro-war think tanks and organizations. You know, it's like the information's all right there. The data is all right there for people to see, but it's like liberals and more, you know, conservative Democrats, they're immune to any facts that would paint the Democratic Party in a bad light, you know, or they're immune to any, they don't want to hear any criticism of the Democratic Party. It's almost become cult-like in the sense that, like, you know, you're not allowed to criticize Joe Biden. You know, you're not mm-hmm. allowed to criticize Nancy Pelosi. You're just supposed to shut up and vote blue no matter who. Like, that is not democracy. You know, that is actually authoritarianism. And that is one of the reasons why 6 months ago I left the Democratic Party. Because these same Democrats who they say we can't criticize, they're the very, you know, corporatists who are standing in the way of progress. You know, we cannot have two political parties in America who both represent Wall Street and who both represent giant corporations. One party at least has to represent the people, has to represent labor and the working class. And we don't have that, you know, and that's really the problem. Both of these corporate parties right now are representing the elites and representing the ruling class. And so, you know, it is very concerning to me that now, you know, because we weren't, I was criticizing Biden his whole mm-hmm. campaign, and I didn't endorse him and I didn't vote for him, mm-hmm. you know, because I was demanding concessions, you know, and he didn't make one major concession to the left. I wanted him to give us Medicare for all or a Green New Deal or universal basic income. Just one of those three transformative policies. Because in this moment, we're in a moment in history where there is massive levels of inequality and injustice. And for these corporate Democrats to think that, you know, they're gonna fine, you governed, you know, for the last 50 years, you governed with a failed, you know, milquetoast neoliberal corporatist approach. I would forgive you for that. But now in this moment, you're gonna try to pull that same status quo BS when there are this many people who are struggling and when there are this many people who are suffering. That's not gonna fly anymore. Like, you either, it's time for these corporate Democrats to put up or shut up.
Absolutely. And I kind of always had my eyes open to, hey, the Democrats might not be who you think they are, because, yes. you know, I was one of those, I have like this sad backstory that a lot of poor people have, especially in the Midwest where I'm at. And, you know, Obama won my state in 2008, which is Indiana. And obviously it's been red really ever since. And it went very red to Donald Trump. So you kind of look at it and you're like, what's happening? And it's like, well, I mean, where I was at and being from the background I'm in, we had the housing crisis. That's when Obama and Biden, took over. And we were told, and my parents very clearly tell me, that you're not allowed, like, give them a break. Right? They just got this. They have to clean up after Bush. Give them a break. Don't say anything. So everyone's losing their homes, millions of people. And then it turns into us filing for medical bankruptcy in 2010 and losing anything that my parents had gained progress on. Mm. And then, you know, facing being unhoused. I mean, my family is still housing insecure, and it's been, you know, 10 years later. And
just for some context, 10 yeah. million Americans lost their homes mm-hmm. during the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. And instead, and this is what's funny when people are like, oh, you know, you didn't have, you know, it was Bush in office. Well, that's crazy because Obama and Biden were both senators who both voted and worked together to bail out Wall Street. When this happened, although they weren't president and vice president yet, they were still senators who still supported the same ideals and principles. And like you said, they work for Wall Street. And I've always known that, you know, it wasn't good. I mean, my parents weren't Democrats either. My parents were conservative slash like libertarians because they were just so burnt out and defeated by the system because, and in my father's words, it doesn't matter who's in office, we're still going to be poor. So, you know, how can you talk to people about, hey, yeah, you know, vote blue no matter who, when it doesn't matter who's in office, you're poor. That's the messaging that the Democrats are failing on right now. And it's why they lost House seats while also winning the presidency. It's why they might have flipped, you know, here and there with the works of activists on the ground. And because, you know, Donald Trump is just absolutely awful. But what are they going to do in 2024? When they can't run against just Trump bad? That's what I'm worried about.
Well, and that's, you're absolutely right. I mean, that was their whole theory of the case, you know, is that, you know, Trump is bad and yeah. you know, who's going to be their scapegoat now? You know, who are they going to blame for everything? And you know, Biden ran a pure anti-Trump campaign and mm-hmm. yeah, he got away with it because Trump is that bad. Yeah. But like now it's time for them to actually stand for something, you know, besides, you know, vote for us because the other guys are worse. Like, how's America ever going to get better if like, you know, our two choices are bad and a little less bad, you know, like it's not, you know, at some point we have to vote for good. And that's never going to happen if you have all these liberals who are telling us that like, you're not allowed to speak the truth about the Democratic Party. And, you know, just because they don't want to hear about the corruption in both corporate parties, you know, and they just want to blame everything on the Republicans when mm-hmm. it's like, well, yeah, the Republican Party is bad, but mm-hmm. the Democratic Party took more money from Wall Street this cycle. So, mm-hmm. you know, how are the Democrats going to save this nation, as so many liberals were saying, and, you know, we got to vote blue to save America. Like, how are you going to save America when the Democrats participate in the same corrupt system that the Republicans participate in? You know, how are you going to, you know, change the system when you're taking the system's money? You know, when you're bought off by these big corporations and Wall Street and the ruling class. And so when you really unpack our political system, you see that it's not, the problem is not Democrats or Republicans. The problem is Democrats and Republicans. The problem is the corporate duopoly, you know, and the stranglehold that, you know, corporations and billionaires have on our government. And until we break that stranglehold and free this nation from corporate rule, you know, I think the most poetic thing and the most honest thing Joe Biden has ever said is when he told those rich donors during the primary that, you know, oh, don't worry about it. If I become president, and I quote, nothing will fundamentally change. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that is the most honest thing he's ever said. And I think it sums up the duopoly and it sums up where we are. Sure, Trump is gone and that's a good thing. But Biden is just going to go in there. And if he governs how I expect him to govern, which is, you know, for his corporate donors and not for the poor and the working class, it's just going to create the same conditions that led to mm-hmm. Trump in the first place. You know, it's mm-hmm. basically these corporate Democrats are going to pave the way for another neo-fascist to rise in the Republican Party in 2024, 2028. And I think that's one thing I think liberals in their comfortable bubble don't want to hear and they don't get. Because look, if you've got some money in the bank and you have health care, sure, turn it on the television.
The Biden administration doesn't seem so scary.
Right. Or yet turning on the TV and hearing Obama spout hope and change platitudes, mm-hmm. that's enough for you. You know, if you got some money in the bank and healthcare, turning on the TV and hearing, you know, Kamala and Joe Biden's speech last weekend, you know, and hearing their platitudes, that's enough for you. But if you are poor and you are struggling and you don't have healthcare, you don't give a crap about hope and change platitudes.
No,
you're like, where is my Medicare for all? You know, where are policies that are going to improve my material conditions and put food on my table? And because I'm working hard here, I'm working two and three jobs and I'm not able to get ahead. And so that really is the problem, is the massive inequality that we have in this country. And, you know, until we fix this rigged system, the rich are going to keep getting richer and the poor are going to keep getting poorer. And I think, you know, the reason people gravitate towards these authoritarian strongmen like Trump is they're, when people's material conditions get so bad, you know, they're desperate. So they're desperate enough to vote for a con man, you know? And I just see this kind of, until liberals kind of realize how complicit they are, I see this kind of vicious cycle continuing to repeat itself until liberals finally wake up and are like, oh, like, I don't just need to resist Trump and resist Republicans. Like, I need to stop resisting the fundamental change that we need to heal this nation. Like, I need to stop resisting progress and these bold progressive policies that will lift everyone up.
I noticed after the election, I'm sure you saw it, where you would see people hold up an election map of like, oh, here's the results from the election. And then they would pull up the education map and they would say, oh, see, these red states, they have low education. They're stupid. Look at them, you know, or I've seen where it's like, oh, these stupid red states, they vote against their best interests. Like, let's cut off any financial aid to them. Literally wishing sanctions on states within our country. So I can only imagine how they feel about foreign countries. And it's, as someone who lives in a Trump district, right, and I have pretty much my whole life, I can tell you, are there Trump supporters that can't be saved? Yeah, absolutely. There are some people that are very far off the deep end that are literal, like, they think Hitler was right. Like, there are people like that out there. There are people that are racist. There are, people that could be marked as like, probably shouldn't go around them. But even for a lot of the racism that I deal with Trump supporters, and where my name came from, the white trash socialist, even on Twitter, that came from when I was door knocking during the Bernie campaign and I was being consistently sent to the poorest, whitest, most Republican neighborhoods in my state to go door knock because I could use the veteran card. That was my way of getting in the door to talk to a lot of these people that have been so brainwashed by what they're watching on Fox News. And even their racism was completely and totally built upon just absolute fabrications that have been regurgitated to them by the ruling class. Like, if you talk to some of these districts and you're like, you know, and they talk about, oh, they took our jobs, or like, oh, you know, illegal immigrants took our jobs and that's why they're racist towards them. It's like, no one took your job. Your boss decided to exploit someone else just trying to feed their kids. Or, oh, no, like that factory that left, especially here in the Midwest with NAFTA, that factory that left, no, they decided to leave because they didn't care about you and your family. The owners of those companies lobbied politicians to make it so it was easy for them to exploit labor across the border. And once you start tearing down these things that people have been taught, these Trump supporters that people like to, you know, go after and say are stupid or whatever, it's since a lot of their views and basis are off of things that aren't true, it's extremely easy to get through. I mean, my family used to be like, both my parents voted for Trump in 2016 and neither of my parents voted for Trump in 2020. It is possible. And they are poor white people that have been absolutely ruined by neoliberal policies. And I was able to flip them from Trump just by talking to them. So instead of posting things like those maps that are like, oh, look how uneducated they are, or oh, right, whatever, or like, maybe instead, like, work it out and like, maybe, I don't know, get out of your bubble and go talk to a poor person and just listen.
Well, but also there is a lot of truth to what some of these poor people are saying, that, you know, both of these corporate parties have essentially rigged the system against us.
Yes.
And so if Democrats want to win back the working class, guess what? Represent the working class. Mm-hmm. Actually fight for policies that help the poor, you mm-hmm. know, and that help the working class. Because mm-hmm. right now what we've seen is, especially since Bill Clinton, you know, since he really sold the party out to Wall Street, you know, it was like this reactionary politics from Reagan. You know, right after Reagan, the Democrats kind of made a decision, well, we can't stand for our values anymore because, you know, everyone's just kind of chasing this kind of, you know, greedy, corrupt capitalism. So we need to just move further to the right. You know, so the Democratic Party made a decision. You know, these third way Democrats, you know, mm-hmm. that instead of fighting for their progressive values and moving the country to the left toward justice and dignity for all people, they decided to move to the right. They decided to chase the corporate money. You know, they decided to govern for Wall Street, and they decided to abandon the working class. You know, before the 90s, historically, the Democratic Party was the party of the working class. You know, we were the party of the New Deal and of Medicare and of Social Security, you know, of some of the greatest legislation to ever help working people in this country's history. But anyone who thinks that now the Democratic Party is the party of working people is lying to themselves. Absolutely. The Democratic Party hasn't been the party of working people in the last, you know, really 30 years. And truthfully, neither party is. The Republican Party isn't the party of working people either. They've also sold out, and they're also owned by corporations and billionaires. And so that really is the problem. And I think that each party has done a great job of, you know, using fear mm-hmm. and propaganda to control their base. You know, and yeah. to keep their base from kind of waking up and demanding better from their parties. And, you know, we saw it in 2016 after Hillary lost. You know, she blamed everyone else but herself for why she lost. You know, she blamed Russia. She blamed Bernie. She blamed Susan Sarandon, yeah. Jill Stein, the left, you know,
everyone
instead of actually
her.
Taking accountability and realizing yep. like, whoa, I didn't have a strong enough agenda for working people. I actually didn't campaign in key swing states, you know, mm-hmm. and now we're seeing the same thing with Trump, you know, and same thing with Republicans. Instead of like taking accountability and having some honest reflection for why they lost, you know, that they allowed their party to become basically a right-wing neo-fascist party
yeah.
and they racialized our politics and started scapegoating immigrants, mm-hmm. you know, instead of treating the material conditions and actually helping people. But now they're crafting a narrative that like, oh, it was this non-existent voter fraud. Again, and they do that to keep their voters compliant, to keep their voters obedient, to keep their voters from waking up and seeing that both parties are rigging the system against us. So in this duopoly, each corporate party has their narratives they use to kind of keep people divided, you know, keep people apart, keep people in these little fractionalized groups. Because the greatest fear, obviously, is if the working class ever truly wakes up and we can build solidarity and realize that, like, you know, it's not, it's both parties, you know, mm-hmm. they're both rigging the system against us. And so I think that is the big fear of these oligarchs and of these corrupt politicians is all of us coming together and building a movement to take our government back from these corrupt parties who are using our government to enrich themselves and their corporate donors while we, the people, are all paying the price.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Although Biden did beat Trump, it was not mm-hmm. the big blue wave that many predicted. Democrats were supposed to expand the majority in the House and take the Senate. And instead, they lost seats in the House and didn't take the Senate. And then in true corporatist fashion, a few days after the election, corporate Democrats punched left and tried to blame progressives. Erica, what is your reaction to these corporate Democrats trying to blame progressives for down ballot losses when it was progressives who campaigned on Medicare for All that won their races, and it was the corporatists who ran uninspiring campaigns and campaigned against Medicare for All who lost?
I was not shocked. I figured, you know, I knew that even though the progressives, the squad, you know, the most vocal ones in office were going to get some backlash and they were going to somehow blame them. And there were a couple that just absolutely made me want to just lose my mind. And the big one was the fact that they not only were blaming, socialism, whatever, come on, but they were also blaming movements like Black Lives Matter. They were blaming the phrase defund the police. Like, oh, this is why I lost my race. It's because of this. Even though Cori Bush was elected, who was literally an on-the-ground organizer during the Ferguson uprising. It's not, it doesn't have anything to do with that, but of course, it's like we said before. I mean, they're going to blame anything and anyone but themselves, because if they were to actually be honest about why they lost, they would have to admit, of why they have these awful policies they have. They would have to admit it's because they're taking millions of dollars as a party in from the pharmaceutical companies. And you would have to face the facts like Clyburn in South Carolina that supplied that, you know, the blue wall for Biden during the primaries. He's taken over $1 million from pharmaceutical companies, and he tried to blame, you know, socialism or whatever is why the Senate seat was lost and Lindsey Graham wasn't unseated in South Carolina, when really it's about policy. If you don't give people a reason to come out and vote, they're just not going to. That's what disillusion of the system causes. And so it's just a way of them to try and once again blame people who are dying, who are sick, who are struggling for the failures that the extremely wealthy donor class, you know, put onto the Democratic Party.
And what I think is absolutely ridiculous is, like, how are they going to try to blame socialism when, first off, like, even the squad doesn't campaign on, you know, socialism. They're campaigning on, you know, basically social democracy, you know, democratic socialist policies. But what I think is just so interesting is, like, here we are, in, you know, capitalism has led now to just two billionaires now hoarding more wealth than half of our entire nation. Like, this is not the capitalism that, you know, our parents grew up with. You know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, when it was kind of sort of still working, and let's be clear, capitalism has never worked for everyone. You know, capitalism is a system of exploitation. You know, in order to have a ruling class, you have to have a poor and a working class that the ruling class exploits. But I just, this idea somehow that, like, socialism is the problem, when we are now living in a time where income inequality is higher in the United States than it was in France just before the French Revolution. I just find it so ridiculous that they're going to try to blame socialism when it's this predatory capitalism that is the main, you know, that is the crux of our problems right now. Like, and we know why they do it, right? They're blaming socialism and social policies because they want to keep governing for their corporate donors. You know, these corporate Democrats don't want to change. They want to keep feeding the people empty platitudes, punching left, and then governing for Wall Street.
Well, and it's funny because it's just wrong. You know, the down ballot progressives that have, you know, campaigned on Medicare for All, have done, you know, work within their communities and do support police reform at a minimum, they're winning their races. It's not even close. I mean, a great example of that, of, you know, the Democratic establishment going hard, was the Ed Markey race. Ed Markey was pushed left. He embraced the left. He embraced things like the Sunrise Movement, the DSA, and he was able to win when he was down in the polls, when literally the entire establishment was gearing up behind Kennedy. And because he embraced these incredibly popular policies, he was able to win. And so when you look at people that have the audacity to say that the movements like Black Lives Matter or to defund the police are hurting the Democratic Party, they're just wrong. You can look at the numbers during, like, since the social, you know, the movement and the movement for Black Lives really kicked up after the murder of George Floyd, you saw an insane increase in cities for registering to vote.
Yep.
If anything, that saved the Democratic Party, because you started seeing, you know, and not even that, the Democrats were trying everything in their power to discredit that movement. I mean, literally, Joe Biden never made a single good statement about Black Lives Matter, ever. He only had the same thing Trump was saying, just a little nicer, where it'd be like, no, I get it. Like, it's super sad someone died. Oh, that really sucks. But, you know, looting is never okay. And it's like, really? Like, why is that in your statement? Why is that going hand in hand? That doesn't make sense, but it's capitalism. It is, you know, it's always coming down to just profits. That's how everything is viewed. It's just, how much money can we make off it? How much money can my donors make off it? And, you know, they don't actually care about this movement. And it was super frustrating to deal with all summer, you know, having to both deal with the Republican Party, of course, which is encouraging, you know, right-wing violence, and then the Democratic Party that is putting the blame back on people and activists. It was absolutely a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I have a flat out question. Can the Democratic Party be saved, or do we have to build power outside of the party or do both, you know, support the few progressives we have in the Democrats that are trying to change the system from within, but also start to build power for the left and for the people, you know, outside of these corporate parties.
I believe in building power where power can be built. So if you are in a district that is maybe a deep red district that is so disillusioned by that D next to someone's name, like my district, that, you know, maybe try and run as an independent, try and run as an outside party, whether, you know, that's the People's Party or the Green Party or you know, whatever it would work for in your district. And, you know, try and attack it from that way to get into office. Or if you're in a deep blue district running against a corporate Democrat like Cori Bush did, run as a Democrat and primary them. These are all options that are all on the table. And I think that we would be limiting ourselves to say, okay, yeah, let's only do this or let's only do this. It's, I believe in just building power where you can, because right now the left doesn't have a lot of power. So if we're able to attack it from all sides by doing things like direct action, mutual aid, and electoral politics, I think we're going to be looking at a quicker solution than just doing only one of the three or building only within the party or outside the party.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I also think that building power outside of these corporate parties is going to create the pressure that we really need to put on the duopoly, who just wants to. I mean, it's like, I just keep thinking to myself, like, are these politicians, at what point are they going to wake up and see the massive levels of inequality and injustice that are, let's be clear, the reason inequality exists in the first place, this is all a political choice.
Yes.
It is a political choice that these corporate politicians make when they decide to write laws that favor wealthy corporations and wealthy billionaires and that don't favor the working class and the poor. You know, it's baked into the laws. You know, when we talk about this corruption, it's you know, instead of serving our human interests, they're serving corporate interests in Washington. That's what's causing this problem. So I just keep thinking to myself, you know, are they ever going to wake up? You know, and the truth is, if they're not now in this moment, I don't think they ever will. And that's why we have to pressure and build power and, you know, keep building the labor movement up, you know, keep unions need to be stronger, you know, building up third parties. You know, when FDR passed the New Deal, he did that because we had a strong socialist party, a strong communist party, if you can believe that or not. Mm-hmm. And we also had a strong labor movement, you know, that was pressuring these Democrats. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize Democrats have always been very conservative on economic issues. You know, they are a capitalist party, just like the Republican Party. You know, they're not socialist. Nothing about the Democratic Party is socialist. The only thing that's socialist about them is the fear-mongering that Republicans use, you know, and the framing they use to scare, you know, people from voting for them, because there's nothing socialist about the Democratic Party. It is a corporatist party. And we have a few left members, you know, less than 10.
Yeah. No, and it's... It can be frustrating to look at sometimes, because especially with Republicans who try and say that people in the Democratic Party are socialist or that they are communists or whatever, especially like I've seen them like call Nancy Pelosi socialist. I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. I promise you the Democrats are more like the Republicans than Democrats are more like any socialist in this country. So there's nothing to fear there. And I really desperately wish the Democratic Party was nearly as left wing as Republicans love to say they are. Make my life a lot easier.
I know, right? I want to vote for this Democratic Party that the Republican says,
I know. You know,
the Republican's talking about, because it doesn't exist. You were very involved in the nationwide protest for Black Lives Matter. You traveled to Kenosha, Wisconsin after the police shooting of Jacob Blake to be a frontline medic for protesters. Erica, can you share with us what that experience was like and how important it is for us to keep protesting for racial and economic justice under a Biden administration?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So like I said in the beginning, I am a veteran. And when I was in the military, I was in the Navy, I was a sonar technician, but you can wear more than one hat in the military. And so I was a triage officer as well on my ship. So I worked very closely with medical personnel. Before I even joined the Navy, I did work as an EMT. And so when the uprising began is when I was getting out of the Navy. I'm very fresh out of the military. A lot of people don't know this. It's very new. And I was attending protests and kind of helping along the way, but I found out like being a street medic was an option, because a lot of times for these protests, and for those who haven't been able to attend one yet, especially one that turned, you know, more violent on the cops' end, they block EMS from coming into the scenes because it's deemed not safe, which is a tactic of both scaring protesters into thinking, if something bad happens to me, no one can come save me. And, you know, it's also a way of controlling the situation, of making it so, you know, people might not want to attend any of these protests. So I got connected, because I'm in Indiana, I live relatively close to Chicago. And so I was able to connect to organizers there first. And then when Jacob Blake was shot, I couldn't believe it. It was one of those videos that just, it reminded me of the same way with George Floyd. It just takes your breath away because of just how absolutely shocking it was. And I felt helpless. I was like, I don't know what to do. You know, it was a Sunday. And so I was just like, oh my gosh. And then more of the story started coming out. And when I found out he was shot in front of his children, who were in the back seat, he was going back to the car to go check on his kids who were crying. It just, kids hit a special spot with me. I have a 2-year-old, and, you know, just, it just hit something in me. And I remember saying to my mom, who's the one that really supports this movement by being my babysitter, I was like, Mom, I have to go to Kenosha, and, you know, I'm going to figure it out. And so I packed my bags and I drove up to Kenosha, and I got up there, and then the shooting happened on a Sunday, and then Monday, you know, there was just full day on, like, day long protests. And, you know, I was gearing up. This was my first time out there really in like such a significant hotspot like Kenosha. I had done like some medic work, and I do volunteer work where you can go and help unhoused folks with basic wound care, but I had never dealt with something as much of a hot spot as Kenosha was at this point. And so when the curfew hit at 8 o'clock, instantly our medic tent was tear gassed, which is a war crime. This is something that you can't even do overseas. And they tear gassed our medic tent. I watched them mace children. One of my first patients was someone out there who was trying to get people registered to vote. It was this older guy. And he couldn't believe it. He was like, I'm just out here with a clipboard. Why did they shoot me with a rubber bullet, which tore through his arm, because they are supposedly non-lethal, but, you know, they literally can be. And that whole night, just realizing that while cops are just brutalizing us, I'm treating patient after patient, and you know, people are panicking. People can't breathe because of the tear gas and the amount of tear gas and pepper balls that they're deploying on us. All of this is happening because they refuse to arrest the cop who shot Jacob Blake in the back 7 times. That was the only reason why all this was happening, was because they were refusing to do so. But something that I started seeing, and something that absolutely, I mean, bothered me. And when I say Kenosha, a lot of people link, you know, not only the Jacob Blake tragedy, but what happened Tuesday night, which was when Kyle Rittenhouse murdered 2 of our friends in the street and almost shot like an arm off of one of our medics that were out there with us. And, you know, so Kyle, everyone knows who Kyle Rittenhouse is. Everyone's heard that name because of what happened. It was a 17-year-old who, you know, went up to Kenosha. He posed as a medic. I don't think many people know that part. He told everyone he was a medic and, you know, just there to help. He wasn't. He was there to kill people. And I started seeing it being made about Trump shortly after that. And, you know, there was some stuff happening earlier on in the movement, but just me personally, I started seeing people talk about, oh, Kyle Rittenhouse and his parents are Trump supporters, and just really starting to make it about him. And I'm like, oh no, because, you know, that cop that shot Jacob Blake and the mayor that wasn't holding anyone accountable and the DA, everyone, they're Democrats. It's Wisconsin. It's a blue state. The governor, the mayor of Kenosha, everyone was a Democrat. So when you see us being brutalized out there in cities, and cities are Democratic controlled, it's, you have to understand this isn't just one person. Is Trump legitimizing people like Kyle Rittenhouse? Yeah, absolutely. His base loved what Kyle Rittenhouse did. They made jokes about it. They people literally got tattoos making fun of it. And, you know, they all have t-shirts. I saw people going as Kyle Rittenhouse for Halloween. But what are the Democrats doing to stop it? They're literally, Biden has proposed increasing funding to the police. You have an entire summer going into the fall of one of the largest, if not the largest, social uprising in the country against police brutality, for defunding the police, for putting resources back into communities. And the president-elect of the supposedly opposition party to the Republicans are saying, oh, no, I love cops. I want to increase more funds than Trump wanted to. What are you supposed to say to that?
It's absurd. And you know what else? When you're sharing your story, and thank you, you know, for being out there and for being on the front lines and you know, providing a necessary, you know, necessary medical care to people who are out there. Just, you know, what strikes me is people are out there protesting for racial and economic justice and protesting against the injustice of the police. And then the police are committing more injustice against the very people who are protesting.
It's honestly crazy.
It's insane to me. And I'm glad you shed light on the fact that a lot of this happens under Democratic leadership in some of these bigger cities, because really what the people are crying out for is, represent us, you know, stop representing the rich and the powerful who already have everything. Pass some policies to help Black and brown communities. Pass some policies to help the working class, you know, pass some policies to help the poor. And instead of doing that, our leadership turns a blind eye, you know, always defends the police, even when the police are committing, you know, brutality and committing murder. Let's be real, murdering, you know, innocent, unarmed Black men, mostly, you know. It's unbelievable to me that both parties are basically, you know, propping up and protecting this kind of, you know, white supremacist oligarchy that we're living under. I mean, if we're going to be honest, that's really what's happening here. And so it just, it's amazing to me that, like, the Democratic Party, you know, and people, like, you know, after the election are again, like you said earlier, you know, basically declaring that, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, and defunding the police and Medicare for all and standing up for the poor and the working class, that's not what we're about. Like, well, then what are you about? You know, are you just in there to just, you know, well, I guess we do know they're in there to just help the rich and to help their corporate donors. It just, and then they turn around and scream like, yeah, we need unity. You know, these corporate Democrats have some nerve to always demand unity when they're not even governing for the people. Like, don't give me this unity crap if you're going to turn around and govern for your corporate donors. There's the only unity you guys want is unity with your powerful donors and with Wall Street. You don't want any unity with the people. If you did want unity, you'd be supporting policies like Medicare for All that 72% of the people support. You'd be supporting policies like a Green New Deal and like universal basic income, and even looking at things like reparations to right the wrongs and that our community has committed against Black and Indigenous people since our nation's founding. But none of that. They don't want to do any of that. They just want to keep peddling the status quo, keep, you know, business as usual. And then, of course, people are going to protest. And we need more people to protest. And we need more people to rise up and speak out against this corrupt system. You know, my biggest epiphany in the last 4 years is that corruption in Washington, D.C. is bipartisan. Both of these parties are corrupt. Both of them are not worthy of our votes until they actually start to govern for we the people.
The biggest thing for me, especially with, like, just in regards to, you know, I've had the opportunity and I take these opportunities to travel to places that need help. There's a group I'm with. So, like, of course, like, Left Flank Veterans does as much as we can to support. We're all vets and we all go out to protest and do what we can to help, whether it be security or for, you know, medic help, or, I mean, even just being a part of the community and showing support, especially as veterans. We, I'm with a group that is called Medics Without Borders. And it's basically just a bunch of street medics from different cities who go to each other's cities if we need help, because it's easy to get burnout as a medic. And it's easy to get, I mean, we all get targeted. I can't tell you how many times I've been arrested because I've had, an identification that, like, I'm a medic. They're going to take us out first. So I was there in Louisville for the decision when they decided to not charge any of the cops in the Breonna Taylor case. Mm. I was there. I was able to travel to Georgia to the ICE detention center. And I think this is something very important that people need to know. Everyone knows what happened in Georgia. There was a whistleblower that came forward that was talking about a doctor at the ICE detention center. It was Irwin County, Georgia. And, you know, they were talking about how there was this horrific doctor there that was performing forced hysterectomies on women, literally sterilizing women, right? One of the most atrocious things you can think of, stealing the ability and like the bodily autonomy that these women have just for whatever reason. And so, I mean, it's just evil. But the thing is, when all of the documents came out, when the whistleblower came forward, a lot of people were talking about vote for Joe Biden because we have to end these camps or kids in cages or, whatever. This all spanned back during the Obama administration as well. This doctor's been doing it since Obama and Biden were in office. So I'm glad it came to light now.
When they built the cages, very cages that Trump used.
Well, and not even just that. Who do you think is funding this? It's the House. House is literally, they control the money. Yep. So anything that you're mad about, if you're mad about these wars, go take it up with the House. Go take it up with Nancy Pelosi, that blue wave that Democrats put millions of dollars into to win the House, to just fund the border wall, fund, you know, these detention centers that are committing atrocities.
Fund Trump's military budget. They voted for Trump's military budget.
If Trump is an inherent threat, a unique threat that we should all be terrified of, why on earth would you keep giving him money? That doesn't make sense to me.
And vote for his authoritarian programs like the Patriot Act and militarized policing.
Exactly.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, time and time again, these corporate Democrats have emboldened and enabled Donald Trump and the rise of neo-fascism in America. And I think that, you know, my big conclusion is that this kind of corporatist neo-liberal politics that the Democrats hide behind is the very thing that emboldens neo-fascism and emboldened the rise of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. Because if the Democrats actually represented the people and they actually represented the poor and the working class, people would have never been that desperate to vote for someone like Donald Trump in the first place.
Absolutely.
And it just behooves me. I just don't get how liberals still want to just, you know, think that this was all an aberration and that Trump was some sort of anomaly and that, like, now that Joe Biden's here, everything is going to be great. Everything's going to be okay. Like, I just don't think people understand truly the systemic corruption and how bad and how this vicious cycle of corruption will continue until we're ready to treat the root causes, right? Until we're ready to actually, you know, fight for policies that deliver dignity and justice for all people. Policies like Medicare for All, you know, policies like a universal basic income, policies like a Green New Deal. These progressive policies, you know, they don't leave anyone out. They include everyone. The progressive movement is fighting for everyone. So while these corporatists and the Democratic Party and the Republican Party keep wanting to govern for the billionaire class and Wall Street, the progressives are actually fighting for policies that help everyone. It just is so crazy how we get labeled the divisive ones when we're supporting an agenda that represents the 99%.
No, absolutely. And the biggest thing that I tell everyone, and I want to make sure I do say, is if you were miserable and you hated Trump being in office for the 4 years he was in office, me too. I know.
Yep.
I know. But if you want to prevent someone that's, I don't know, capable, that isn't so loud about their neo-fascist policies and beliefs, if you want to prevent someone like Tom Cotton from becoming president in 2024, you need to push for progressive policies to make it so because the Republican Party could very easily come out tomorrow and say, we support, you know, we're putting Americans first. We support universal health care. And then it's game over.
Yep.
You have to beat them to the punch, because if we let the Republican Party do anything that is pro you know, working class or actually represents the people. And they could easily phrase it as like, oh, we want to put Americans' lives first. And, you know, that's why we're going to have, and they're not going to call it Medicare for All. They'll call it, you know, Trump Care or whatever. You know, they could do that tomorrow. And then good luck going to someone's house and door knocking for a Democratic candidate that wants to take away their universal health care. And this is a serious fear of mine. So push for progressive policy, or else in 2024, we're going to be looking at a whole new monster. And in 2022, we could see what happened during the Obama administration, where we lost the House as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I want to kind of shift gears and talk about the pandemic, because we're seeing the pandemic has now become a humanitarian disaster.
Yeah.
With the U.S. surpassing now 240,000 deaths and 10 million total cases. Mm-hmm. Here's my thing, Erica. If our government cannot even take care of its people during a crisis, during a pandemic like this, then what is even the point of having a government? Like, isn't this their job? You know, is the United States a failed state? And why has our government failed our people so badly during this time of need?
The pandemic for me has just really proven that our, like, the American government, it's literally just a poster of like, they don't care about you.
Yep.
This was a choice. Yep. They could have done what every other country did and just shut down for 4 to 6 weeks, you know, give us a stimulus check, give us a universal basic income, you know, cover the healthcare costs, do whatever for 4 to 6 weeks. And not even a fraction of the people would have died. But instead, they gave us one stimulus check in March. There you go. That's it. We had like kind of like halfway done shutdowns, but nothing was ever put in place. My mom is an essential worker. My mom's a school bus driver. And during the pandemic, they had school bus drivers going out and delivering food to people that are on free and reduced lunches. So these are kids like myself who wouldn't have eaten without these meals, which was incredible. And you know, my mom was more than proud to do it. But they tried to cut her pay during this. And the only way that we stopped it was we organized a strike. That was my first strike and we won. But yes. It was
power
beautiful.
To the people.
And that's what I mean is like I did that within a fully red Trump district. And guess what? All 14 of those bus drivers, none of them voted for Trump now. That is how you flip people. Not by yelling at them to stop supporting progressives. You go out and you help them. And so.
Well, what a concept.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Crazy, right?
If you like, just don't yell
at people.
Who
would know that like actually helping people and fighting for policies that benefit people, that they'll actually vote for you and support you?
If you want to like really combat the rampant propaganda that we're force-fed all the time, it's just go out and help your neighbor. I know that sounds silly and it sounds like, whatever. I promise you, all of those ladies at my mom's work know I'm a socialist. Do you think they cared when I was out there literally fighting for them to maintain their pay? No. Do you think they cared that I was a socialist when all of a sudden they got paid vacation days? They got paid, they got an increase in pay and a decrease in required hours? No. They're like, dang, these socialists are kind of cool. Like, is this what we were worried about? And there's been a lot of work like that. And that's the thing is like mutual aid groups and groups like the Black Lives Matter, DSA, they're out there feeding the community when the government has it. So to answer
that's
your
right.
question, yeah, our government has done nothing but just shown that it is a failure. It cannot handle a pandemic that every other country handled.
Well, and we all saw what they did, right? Back in February and March when the pandemic hit, the first thing both corporate parties did is pass a massive bailout for their corporate donors.
Yes.
You know, and they called it the CARES Act.
Yep.
I think everyone needs to be very careful because there is a long tradition in our government of naming things like, for instance,
if it sounds nice, it's not.
If it sounds nice, it's not. Like the Patriot Act, you know, turns out that was mass surveillance of you. Mm-hmm. You know, the CARES Act, you know, well, it had a lot of care for the billionaire class, but it didn't have a lot of care for poor and working class people. And since the CARES Act was passed, we've seen billionaires, like I said earlier, increase their wealth by over $1 trillion during this pandemic, while the American people are struggling to barely keep their heads above water. You know, this pandemic to me has really, if you doubted like who our government works for, you know, before the pandemic, now it should be very clear that our government does not serve the people. because we don't live in a democracy, which democracy means that you have a government that's of, by, and for the people. We live in an oligarchy where we have a government that is of, by, and for the ruling class. And that is really the problem. And so until we fix that, you know, really, you know, the people didn't win this election in 2020. Wall Street won another election. The oligarchs won another election. Until we elect a truly progressive president, you know, someone like a Bernie Sanders, until we have a progressive House and a progressive Senate that actually hears the voices of the people louder than they hear the voices of their corporate donors, this insanity and this inequality and this injustice in our nation is going to continue. And so I think, you know, credit to you for getting out there. And I think as electoral politics fails us more, that more people are going to turn to mutual aid and direct action and protest and building community, you know, and building solidarity amongst their communities, because the government is just, you know, help is not on the way from the government.
And it's so much, I'm not going to discredit the work that a lot of organizers do, but it's a lot more direct than I think a lot of people realize. Like, in my mom lives in this incredibly small town, you know, 15 minutes away from me. And during the pandemic, my mother, who once again voted for Trump in 2016 and is now a socialist, it's possible. This is, yes, in her 50s.
I love that. From Republican to radicalized.
Literally. Like, that's she, together, we have organized a food pantry at the local library. No questions asked. You can come from wherever. You don't have to be a resident. There is, they have a Facebook page to where they can all talk to each other, which sounds silly, but it works for the boomers. It's a very boomer town too. And if you need something, my mom moderates the page. You can message my mom and she will anonymously ask the page for if people have something. So there's no shame. There is, you know, they do ride shares for people that have appointments that can't get there. It's like this little community that is just slowly but surely radicalizing, and it's becoming more of a community. And this district in 2016 went, like, oh my God, I think it was like 79% or 80% to Donald Trump. And now with the election results, it only went 51% to Trump. Wow, that's huge drop.
Yep.
You know, and a lot of that happened from the pandemic. So this is what I'm saying. If you want to stop people like Donald Trump, if you want to stop people that you're terrified of that are going to do nothing but hurt you, and especially our marginalized communities that we're dealing with, if you get out there and you set up things like this, I mean, this is a serious opportunity during the pandemic to step up and show that people have power and that the government is going to let you down, because they have. We can, you know, we can beg and ask and call and email, but mutual aid is one of the most dangerous things, at like threatened wise, to our government. That, why do you think they were so adamantly against the Black Panthers, who did an insane amount of mutual aid within their community? It's because it shows that, no, we're here for you. You know, we are the ones that are going to feed you. We are the ones that are going to help each other because we protect us. And if you're out there winning hearts and minds, it doesn't matter how many, you know, commercials you show about, oh, communism bad, socialism bad. When you have someone that's an open socialist that literally calls themselves the white trash socialist, organizing a union for you, you know, going out and doing these things, that is how we win. That's how we combat this. And even if we don't win, those are people's lives that are better for at least a day. And that's what matters at the end of the day.
Well, and it breaks this kind of abusive cycle that the government wants to keep everyone in, where, like, again, these are our tax dollars. We all pay them, our government tax dollars, for them to just throw little breadcrumbs at us. And they want to keep us down. They want, you know, the idea of freedom in the United States, I always find it so funny to me. It's just laughable to me that they try to equate this, you know, predatory capitalist system with freedom. Because as we've seen, this system only really gives freedom to the elites and gives freedom to the ruling class. When you have now just two billionaires own more wealth than half of our entire nation, like, who's actually free here? You know, the majority in this country aren't free. The majority of the people in this country aren't free because they're living under corporate rule. They're living under the rule of these heartless plutocrats and these greedy oligarchs. There's no freedom in, you know, having insurance and then getting cancer and then having a giant insurance corporation deny your claim, so now you're medically bankrupt. You know, there's no freedom in having to work three jobs because you can't even find one job that pays a living wage and guarantees you healthcare. You know, so it's like the American people are not going to be free so long as we're living under the thumb and under the rule of these just greedy oligarchs and corrupt politicians. And so, you know, my last question here, we're kind of nearing the end. This has been such an enlightening conversation, Erica, but in a recent survey by Career Builder, 78% of Americans reported that they live paycheck to paycheck. And we now have, like I said earlier, a staggering 140 million Americans who are either poor or low income. So why are so many people still defending a predatory capitalist economic system when it is not working for the majority of the people in this country? Why are people so afraid of socialism when they should be afraid of capitalism? And how do we shift this perception so we can move away from this predatory economic system and move toward a more just economic system that distributes wealth more evenly?
The biggest thing that I find, especially being in a state like Indiana, is, you know, it's that age-old saying where it's like everyone's just a temporarily embarrassed millionaire.
Right.
I'm going to make it someday. That's what our culture is. It's if you just work hard enough, you'll get there. And that's something that, I mean, my parents, my family, no one in my family's been rich. If you go back time and time and time again, we're all poor. You're telling me that we can go back 15 generations and we're all still in poverty? It's not about hard work, I promise you. You know, my great-great-grandfather, who was a coal miner in West Virginia, was working way harder than Jeff Bezos ever has.
That's right.
So it's not about how hard you work or how hard you push. And people believe that because it's hard to think of any other reality besides being poor and just trying to work hard when that's all you've known. Now, luckily, I've been able to work on breaking my parents out of this system of like, hey, you know, you're working hard enough, but everything around us tells you that the reason you're poor is your fault. You know, they're going to tell you that, you know, if you just go to school, right? Go get an education. But anymore, even people with college degrees aren't even making over $45,000 a year. So what do you expect people to do? You know, oh, go get a master's degree, go get a PhD, go get a second job or go do these things when they don't realize even going to college is a privilege that so many of us don't have. That was the reason I joined the military. People literally cannot pay their student loans, which is supposed to be a way to get out, to have, upward class mobility. That's what they tell you. Go learn to code. Go learn a trade. Go to college. Go learn how to do something. And that's all you need to do to not be poor anymore. But when you don't have wages rising, matching the productivity that people are putting out, but you have the cost of living rising, I mean, it's just, there is no American dream anymore. And as soon as people realize this, that it doesn't matter how hard you work, it doesn't matter what you do, most of it depends on luck and who your parents are. You'll have a success story every now and again, like, you know, Oprah Winfrey. She grew up pretty poor and now she's a billionaire. But that one example, or like the examples every now and again you'll hear, that doesn't represent the mass of people. That just shows the luck of a few. So as we go forward as a working class, as we, you know, keep going, the biggest thing that we can do to help people open their eyes, or, you know, the best example I have is 14 bus drivers in the middle of a right-to-work state during a global pandemic came together and they had no idea what they were doing. I had no idea what I'm doing. I'd never admit that to people. And we won. Do you know how long we had to strike in order to get benefits that they had never had? 6 hours.
Wow.
It doesn't have to be what people think it is. It's just people are so afraid of they're almost afraid of taking back that power because we've known nothing but, you know, living under the oppressive system that we've been born into. So the idea of having healthcare, having childcare, having a living wage, having any of these things, I mean, under capitalism, where we're at now, I mean, it's late stage capitalism. We are watching the, you know, just an absolute destructive system just implode on itself. And, you know, what are we supposed to do? all you can do now is try our best to organize, fight within our workspaces, listen to people like Rashida Tlaib, who is one of the most pro-union members in Congress, or Ilhan Omar. She is putting out trainings for how to unionize your work. Here's what to do. You know, the IWW, go to them. They have countless, like just pages and pages of resources, which is where I went to help figure out how to help my mom. And start doing these things. I mean, Bolivia has a 40% union rate for all workers. If you want to have a labor movement, you have to start with labor. And if you want to have representation of the working class, you have to go and talk to the working class. And that is what we can do to try and make a difference. And it's so much easier said than done. But the more and more small wins we have across the country, and help uplift each other when we have those victories and pick each other up when they are not victorious, that is how we're going to make a difference. Having people run for all levels of office in 2022 to put pressure on politicians who usually are not challenged, that is one way we're going to be able to win. Think about if we had a progressive or leftist running against every single corporate Democrat in 2022 for the House. It would be a nightmare for the Democratic Party. Those are the types of things that we need to be encouraging and uplifting, because even though electoral politics will not save us, it is a tool because it is part of the system that we're in now. So while we're organizing outside of politics, outside of the Democratic Party, outside of, you know, any of these structures of institution, when we put pressure from all sides, that's how we can win. And in the meantime, we're going to be helping people that the Democratic and Republican Party have forgot about. And to me, that is how we can win.
That was beautiful. And I couldn't agree with you more. And especially the part about your great grandfather being a coal miner?
My great-great-grandfather was a coal miner, and actually in the Battle of Blair Mountain, which was the largest labor uprising in since the Civil War.
You know, and the fact, you're absolutely right when you said, like, it's not that, you know, he didn't work hard. You know, that's a great myth with capitalism. Jeff Bezos, you know, isn't the richest man in the world because he worked harder than the poor or the working class. He's the richest man in the world because the system is rigged for him. The laws are rigged for him to be able to hoard that amount of wealth. And so that's why we have to fight back against this corrupt system. And I think, you know, overall, Americans, you know, Americans want things to be fair. You know, when we watch sporting events, we don't want, you know, people don't want to watch a sporting event that's been rigged before the games even started. You know, we want it to be an even playing field. Well, our economy is rigged. You know, it's like the billionaires and the ruling class start the game with, you know, all the money, and we don't, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I do think as more people wake up and see how unfair and how rigged the economy is, and how socialism essentially is just giving power back to the people. Mm-hmm. And taking, you know, power away from these corrupt politicians and oligarchs who've essentially robbed people and stolen and plundered people's wealth so they can be rich and more powerful. That's all we're doing, is just giving power back to the people, you know, who've had it taken from them from this corrupt system. So, no, that was a very powerful personal story. Go, and the fact that it runs in your family, like this kind of work runs in your blood.
I was supposed to be this. I always say, like, I was always supposed to end up, you know, this radical pro-union leftist or whatever my dad calls me, because it's hundreds of years it can go back, and it's just been nothing but my, you know, family and millions of others just being absolutely oppressed. So it's like, well, I got to keep going. I got to try. That's because that's, you know, best case scenario, we end up a socialist utopia. Worst case scenario, nothing changes. So why not try?
Absolutely. And we deserve so much better than this. Like, why should we have a system that oppresses anyone? Why should we have a system that allows anyone to live in poverty? Like, it just, you know, and so we have to start thinking outside the box. We have to start challenging the status quo. We have to start fighting for something better.
Absolutely.
And finally, I want to ask you, Erica, what have you learned about yourself, and what have you learned about America over the past 4 years in your advocacy work?
I've learned that I have a pretty decent ability to connect with people who feel like they can't connect with anyone anymore. You know, I never thought I would be comfortable enough to just go door to door and talk to people. Believe it or not, I actually have a lot of social anxiety and I feel, you know, overwhelmed and you know, I didn't know that I was going to be able to go out and ever do this kind of stuff. If you would have told me 4 years ago that I would be where I'm at now, I wouldn't have believed you. That I would be working with groups like Left Flank, who are out doing insanely, incredibly just influential advocacy work in a space that didn't exist before Left Flank. It was always like neoliberal, funded by the military-industrial complex think tanks out there. There really wasn't a group of leftist veterans advocating besides, you know, we have like Eyes Left and About Face does some incredible work too for anyone listening who wants to get more involved. You know, these are all options. But, you know, the biggest thing I've learned is like, people like myself included is like, we're so much more capable than, you know, the wealthy want us to find out. And as Americans and something I've learned about people, so many more people are able to be saved than you realize. That you shouldn't limit your organizing to blue safe areas, that you shouldn't, you know, ignore the needs of people because, oh, they voted for Trump. Let's put sanctions on them, whatever. Those are the people that if you're able, especially if you're family members, I know a lot of people listening probably are having a family member they're thinking of that voted for Trump and that are going to be obnoxious during the holidays. But, you know, there is an ability to save people. And the biggest thing to remember always that if didn't vote voted, they would have come in second place in the race. There's a lot of people out there that need to feel represented again. And those are the people that you need to go after.
Yeah.
So those are two of the things I've learned.
That's well said. And thank you so much for talking to me today. And how can my listeners follow you? Like, where can they find you on Twitter? And how can they also follow Left Flank Vets? Mm.
So for my personal Twitter, it's just Erica the White Trash Socialist. You can't miss it. I always have some ridiculous picture up. With corn cobs on it. And Left Flank, you can find us on Twitch, Left Flank Vets. We stream every single day and we have a whole array of things and it's just a bunch of veterans getting together and, you know, having a good time. So that's always fun. And then on Twitter, you can find us at Left Flank Veterans.
Awesome. Well, again, happy Veterans Day week. And thank you for all the work that you are doing, Erica, to make this country a better place. And I look forward to continuing the fight with you as we move forward into the next year and hopefully, you know, get to that socialist utopia that you shared about.
We can try, of course. No, thank you, Ryan, so much for having me on.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Erica. And also, I want to let you guys know that I just did an interview with Double Down News, and I think you might like it. So make sure you go to you can go to their YouTube page. It's Double Down News, or you can go to doubledown.news, and you can check out the interview I did with them. It was an awesome interview. I think you guys will all enjoy it. And now, before I go, I want to thank all of our Patreon subscribers who make this podcast possible and help my advocacy work. It's that time where once a month I'm going to thank everybody. And if you would like to be a Patreon subscriber, you can go to patreon.com/proudsocialist and support the show for, you know, $2 a month, $3 a month, $5 a month, however much you can. It definitely helps. Okay, so I'm going to start off here. And if I mispronounce anyone's name, please yell at me on Twitter or send me a direct message. But hopefully I'll get everyone's name right. So I want to thank Renee Marcel. I want to thank Tiffany Mahmoud. I want to thank Frank McAvoy. I want to thank Jody Shields. I want to thank Michael Johnson. I want to thank Eric Peterson. I want to thank John Paul De Luca. I want to thank Margaret Sokolowski. I want to thank Anna Estrada, Patreon Tom, Bryn, Jean-Michael DiPardo, Jacqueline Bodie, David, Susan McGraw-Kieber, Kathleen Alexander, Susan Sarandon. Thank you, Susan, for supporting the show. Kenny Alums, Troy Hewitt, Sean O'Brien, Mason, Charlie Wilkin, William McLaughlin, DJ Comatose, Joyce Yang, Jeremy Leeming, Liz Kirkland, William Holtz, Alexandra Orso, Shauna Pearson, Patty Cleary, Walter Hackett, Russell Whitworth, Ruben Sanchez Jr., Elizabeth Kim. Thank you guys so much for supporting the podcast. And again, if you guys want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/proudsocialist. I hope everyone has a great weekend. And again, check out that interview I did with Double Down News. I think you'll enjoy it.